Community Exchange, brought to you by ComFest Radio. Community Exchange is an ongoing discussion of issues affecting communities around the world. We're talking today with Ryan Diamond, Community Currencies. Ryan, why are you interested in community currencies? How did you get involved in this topic?
I suppose I started getting involved in this subject when I started reading Bernard Lyotard's book, Money and Sustainability. I'm very interested in the sustainability field. I run a nonprofit organization that focuses on sustainability projects, community projects. And Bernard...
Tell us the name of your...
Oh, Institute for a Resource-Based Economy.
Okay.
And so we run a tool library in Toronto amongst other educational projects.
Yeah.
But we are starting Toronto's first time bank, which is something that we'll get into in a moment. But just to answer your question about the currencies and how I got involved, so I started reading Bernard Lyotard's book. And he talks a lot about how currencies, well, right now we have a monoculture, essentially. We have a monoculture of currencies. And everybody knows a monoculture, at least in nature, doesn't really exist, aside from if man-made tries to keep out as many other cultures as possible to have a very efficient system.
Now, what do you mean?
Production.
What is a monoculture?
So a monoculture of currencies, monoculture just being one species.
Yeah.
So our money right now is bank debt money. So it's created by private banks. And that's really the only money we have created out of debt. So this is not a very stable system. So Bernard Lyotard, who is a former central banker, he understood that we've had about an average of 10 serious financial crashes or bank collapses a year for the last, say, 30 years. And these are statistics from the IMF, International Monetary Fund. So given this instability... And this is around the world. We don't necessarily see it here in Canada or in the U.S. as often. But inherently, all these systems have a similar quality, which is that they have just one type of money. So he's saying, well, what we need is we need different types of money for different purposes. And with these different types of money, we could then perhaps have a more stabilized system. And with that system, we could prevent these crashes from happening and also, you know, empower communities and... It's achieved some of the things that the current money system doesn't really achieve very well.
So, Ryan, you're saying that we live in an economic monoculture and it's better to have multiple economic systems to serve different purposes. You know, what other purposes could be served by having a different economic system?
Well, it's not necessarily we're talking about an entirely different economic system when we're talking about complementary currencies or community currencies. In this case, a complementary currency doesn't replace the national money. So if it's U.S. dollars or Canadian dollars, it doesn't replace that. But what it does is it fills in some of the gaps that this money isn't working very well to achieve. So there are certain goals in society that people have, and people need access to money in order to achieve those goals, but certain times it's a scarcity. So this guy named Edgar Kahn, Dr. Edgar Kahn out of the U.S., found that in times of economic recession, government funding would trickle down. So there would be a kind of an austerity measures. This was happening in the 80s, and it's currently happening today in Europe and many other places where the federal government or the municipal government can't fund some of these social programs. And so he found that the organizations who were, you know, trying to provide services for people were strained because they didn't have enough money to provide those services. So he says, well, this isn't the way to go. What we're doing is it's a top-down approach. We're waiting for money from the top, as opposed to saying, why not take an asset-based approach? Why not look at our members instead of what they need, but what they can also provide to the system? And perhaps we can make a different kind of exchange. So he came up with the idea of time banking. This is in the 80s.
Time banking, yeah.
Time banking, which is a complementary currency, which allows people who don't have any money or very limited money to still participate and make exchanges without by using time as the currency.
So time banking as a currency exchange kind of system can be used by anyone, but you're saying it can be really beneficial for people who can't get credit at a bank, for example.
Typically, it's works best amongst communities either that are older, senior citizens,
uh-huh.
or amongst people that, you know, don't have access to a lot of money. So, you know, unemployed or very low income, and they need alternatives.
Now, how would the time bank work?
So the way it works is, let's say you and I were to make an exchange. You needed me to help you with your garden, and I happen to have some gardening skills. So you'd say, okay, I'm going to look up on this website who has gardening skills. You'd find me on this website because I have a profile and I have a list of skills that I've listed there. And you'd contact me and say, can you help me out in the weekend? I need 4 hours of help with the garden. I can't do it all myself, and I'd really like to get it done this weekend. So I say, sure. So I come over there, and I earn 4 hours to do this. You don't pay me in cash. You pay me in time. So I have a +4 in my account, and you have a -4 in your account. Now, you have to work off that -4 over time by making a transaction with someone else. So you happen to have skills as an interviewer. Maybe you can offer that skill. Maybe you're a very good cook. Maybe you have an ability to offer some web services, etc. So you have even simple things like babysitting someone's child, or maybe giving somebody a ride somewhere because you happen to have a driver's license and someone else doesn't. These kinds of services, you know, when someone doesn't have a lot of money and they have to pay for a cab, it could add up. But if it's just an hour of someone's time, then there's an ability to make an exchange where otherwise you wouldn't have been able to. And this kind of thing, for me, you know, it works also in my favor because now I have 4 hours to use in this time bank to get services that I want. Now, let's say I happen to have a lot of money and I'm using this program. But I know that if I were to pay, say, a software developer to help me with my website, it would take a software developer 1 hour. Meanwhile, he'll charge $200 an hour, say. And I know for me it would take me 4 hours to do the same thing. So even if I wanted to save the $200 and do it myself, it would still cost me 4 hours of my time, which I might be able to spend doing something else. So for me it might be worthwhile to just spend the hour to get the software developer to do it, and then I save essentially 3 hours of my day to do something else and perhaps earn an income. So time banks could work for people with money or without money, but essentially it allows a transaction to happen, and the added benefit is that you build a relationship with somebody that's different than with money. With money, when you're using the traditional currency, it tends to cause a separation amongst people because I pay you and then I have an expectation that you're just going to do work for me because I'm paying you. And with time, it tends to be a different transaction because now it's more unique certainly in the culture, and you know that someone is within the community and it's more localized, and so you get to know these people. And then actually with time banks, the funny thing is that once you start initiating a relationship with a time bank, people get to know one another a little better, and then they stop using the time bank. They just now just call you up and they say, hey, I need you to help me with my gardening, rather than even work with the time bank. And you're like, well, you're a friend of mine now, so of course I'll come over and help you with the gardening.
Still expecting to have an exchange at some point along.
Potentially, but maybe not. Maybe it takes this kind of program to initiate that community.
Now tell me, with the time bank system, would 1 hour of a gardener's time be equivalent to 1 hour of a chef's time, for example?
Potentially.
Or do they value hours differently for different skills?
It depends on the time bank. You can make your own rules. Generally, it's encouraged to have 1 hour be equal to 1 hour, but the time banks are created by the community and they're run by the community.
So if somebody wanted a double time credit.
So if you felt that you're a master gardener, and this is what you did for a living,
and you have
a very high skill, you might say, well, I'm going to give you an hour for some time, but it's going to be more than an hour of the charge. You're going to have to pay me 3 hours. Or maybe you pay me 1 hour and you give me $10. But I would have otherwise charged you $50. Uh-huh. You know, so you work it out, and you could have a negotiation between the two parties.
Lovely.
But ultimately, it comes down to this kind of equality, reciprocity. People are both contributing, and you try to encourage people. You know, everybody only has 24 hours in a day, whether you're rich or whether you're poor. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe wealthy people live longer than poorer people on average, but you still have that amount of time in the day. And even in your young life, which is the most precious, yes, you both poor and rich are equal in that regard. So just to say that you've gone to school and education, you have certain skill set, doesn't necessarily entitle you to more, because you know everybody has skills that I need to offer. And if I don't want to cook my meal, like, it's valuable for me to eat a good meal. And if you happen to be a great chef and you only went to school for 5 years and you happen to have a great skill and cooking meals, or maybe you didn't go to school at all. Maybe you just learned it from your parents, you know, and you just have to be a really great chef. Like, why is that worth less than my time? I happen to go to university and I happen to get an accounting education or something. So, you know, the people who participate in the time banking understand that.
And they can negotiate.
But
they can develop their own time values.
Sure.
sounds like a very reasonable system. So what makes it work? Is there a central computer system that keeps record of everyone's contributions?
Sure. You can go, if you wanted to start your time bank in your community, you can go to a website called ourworld.org.
Our as in H?
H-O-U-R,
okay.
world.org.
Yeah.
And they have a program there that's free, so you can
Our World.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so that's a free software.
Well, what does Our World do? It gives you the software to set up a time bank system.
Exactly. So you contact them, you say, I want to set up a time bank, this is what I want to call it, this is where it's located, they put you on a map, and then you start promoting that through their website. If you wanted to take their template and put it on your own website, they could also help you do that. And actually, very kind people. They encourage you to take some training. So there might be training within your neighborhood, like within a city that's close to you, that someone has done a time bank, or maybe you can just do it over Skype and learn some of the finer points on how to manage a time bank well. But some of these are very established, these time banks. Some of them are decades old. The one in Japan, which is focusing on elderly people and taking care of elderly people who want to stay in their homes primarily, rather than go to their own old folks' home, kind of. That's been going on for many decades, and it's very successful. It's in many cities in Japan.
Mm-hmm. It sounds so simple, it's a simple matter of a human exchange, and you just keep record of the time, and you go online to, it's like an online banking system for hours.
Sure, yeah.
It makes perfect sense. And anyone can set this up in any community, for that community, or for an online community?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, It's encouraged. It probably works best if you have people that kind of are in the same neighborhood. The way that we're setting it up here in Toronto is we're doing it at an organization called Center for Social Innovation, which is essentially a shared office space, but for entrepreneurs who care about social issues. So they're often charities, nonprofits, software developers, designers, and they're all kind of in the mindset that they want to change the world in a positive way, consistent with their values. So you get a lot of people getting
along.
Center
for Social Innovation.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Have they set up a time bank?
Well, that's what we're doing for them.
You are helping to set up a time bank for the Center for Social Innovation.
Exactly, yeah.
You heard it here, folks.
Yes.
And how far along are you with this grand experiment?
Everything's set up. It's just we need to have better promotional material. So we're working on the promotional material, and then we'll kind of...
So you have the software system set up.
Set up.
It's online?
Yep.
Could I go online and see what you're setting up?
Yeah, you go to ourworld.org and you look up the CSI Time Bank,
then
you can become
Time
a member.
Bank. Okay.
Right now it's...
How does one become a member of a Time Bank?
Well, it's very easy. You just go to the website and you type in your name and the skill sets that you have, and you could upload a picture if you want. Kind of decide what you want to do.
A profile, professional
profile.
This is what I can do.
Yep.
Okay.
And then people can search you out if they want a certain skill set that you might have.
And is there a fee for joining?
Right now we're doing it for free to test it out. And if it's a successful program, they have about 800 people in their network right now. So, you know, we hope to get as many of those as possible to become members. And if it is a successful program, depending on how many hours it takes to manage it, really it manages itself. But if people have problems, if there's an error in someone's calculation and, you know, they want to change something, they would need the administrator to change something. So they would contact essentially me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how many hours that is, I think I would talk to CSI and see if we could work something out in terms of just my time and how valuable it is. Obviously, I would be earning time in the time bank for the amount of work that I do for that. But, you know, there might be a lot of the time banks, they have an administrator fee. So it's $5, $10 a year, something like that, to just become a member and maintain your membership. And that money goes towards some of the printing costs as well as the salary of somebody. Sometimes they have a part-time salary. Sometimes they have full-time. And, yeah, so you're still using the money system, like the traditional money system, but obviously you can't pay for everything in time. So that's why it's a complementary system. It doesn't replace the money system. It just adds to it, and it makes transactions happen that otherwise wouldn't.
Now, you're calling it a complementary economic system or a complementary exchange system. I've heard the other term, community exchange system, community dollars, this kind of thing. So a community exchange system, a community dollar, is the same as a complementary? Well, it's just different ways of looking at the same thing, then.
Pretty much most of the complementary currencies, they don't have to be just in a community. So I guess it's a broader term. Maybe a community currency is more specific. Complementary currency could be global.
I see.
Another complementary currency is, for example, air miles. That's a global system. Air miles, people use all around the world to purchase typically air flights. The reason they did that, the reason that the companies that use air miles did that, was because they realized they had spare capacity on a lot of their flights. So they said, well, you know, we're paying for the flight, we're paying for the airplane, we're paying for the staff. You know, the marginal cost of an additional passenger on this flight is very minimal, because the fixed costs are what's really the big cost, the salaries, the gas, you know, the maintenance of the airplane. So they're like, well, we want more people in our planes, and we want to have kind of a network where, you know, people take our flight versus other flights. So if we can have kind of a complementary currency, air miles, it maybe takes up that capacity, doesn't cost us almost anything, and people can use these air miles to get flights, and now you can actually get products too, products and services off of their website. You don't just have to get flights. And that works for them, and they get to have a rapport with their audience, so people always want to take their flights and, you know, maybe use air miles for part of it, or you may use air miles for a whole flight, but it incentivizes you to keep on using their airline, and then you develop a customer relationship with them.
Well, you mentioned an interesting aspect that air miles, for example, helps use up the spare capacity. Mm-hmm. And I suppose that's the same with a time bank. Mm-hmm. And a complementary currency, where a lot of people might go to work or have certain obligations, but everybody has a little spare time. Some people have a lot of spare time. And I suppose a time bank offers people an opportunity in how to use spare time.
Right.
And turn it into money, basically, into an exchange that is worth money.
Yeah, I mean, it's so crazy. There's so much work to do in this world, you know? And there's so many people, like when you look at an unemployment rate, and they're like, oh, it's 8% or 7%, and that's pretty good, you know, on average, that's a good statistic. And maybe it's going to go up, and everybody, you know, they freak out at a certain number, but at another number, it's okay. But I'm like, 8%, I mean, can you imagine the capacity of these people to do something? And there's so much work that needs to be done. It's just there's no money for it.
So the scarcity today is
money.
Someone could join the time bank and be employed, even though they can't be part of the regular economic system.
Well, there's some very interesting examples. So I'll give you an example that the government used in, this is in Belgium. What they had, this is a bit of a story for you, so I'll give you a couple minutes here. So what we had was this municipal government decided that they wanted to do a project with the community. They had a lot of people that were from different parts of Europe, so they spoke a variety of languages. You know, Turkish, I think, was the main language in this, but it's in Belgium, right? They don't even speak Turkish. So there was a lot of languages, and they didn't know, and all these people were living in high-rises. And they said, we want to start a currency project, but we don't know what to do. So they surveyed the people there, and they said, what is it that you would like? What is it that's missing in your life that you would like? And they're all living in these high-rises, and a lot of the people came back, and they said, we want a garden. You know, we're coming from Eastern Europe, different places in the world where we're used to having a garden. Now we come here to Belgium, and we have no garden because we can't afford it. Too expensive. So the government said, okay, well, what do we have? We have this plot of land that used to have a factory on it, but the factory was torn down and it was basically this deserted plot of land. And they said, well, it's going to cost us a lot of money to convert that land and to make it into gardens, which is what the people want. But why don't we invent have this currency? So they came up with a currency and they said, if you, as a citizen here of this town, come and fix up this land to make it a garden, and then you plant your garden, we will pay you in this currency. You will earn for every hour that you put in this local currency.
Was it a time bank system?
It's not a time bank. It's actually a physical currency.
Which was not the national currency.
Right.
Okay.
So it was specific to this town. And they said, you will get this garden, but you'll have to pay us rent for this garden, for your plot. You know, they had divided it into plots, and you will have to pay rent. And that rent is not in euros. We don't accept euros for this rent. We only accept this currency, this special currency. So everybody's like, well, I want a garden. And I know that the only way to get this garden is if I pay in this new currency. So they're like, well, what do I do to earn this currency? What can I do? So they said, well, there are a lot of things you can do. One is, obviously, you can fix up this land to make it gardenable. But once that's done, there's other things you can do. You can put no junk mail on your mailbox, and that's worth one of these, you know, fake dollars. I can't remember the name of the program now, but you could look that up. Then there was, if you put, flowers in your windowsill, that was worth something. And there were all these things that the government wanted in terms of this community and things that they wanted to have happen in this community, clean up on a garbage day, clean up this thing that's polluted, something that's polluted, these environmentally social goals, training older people to use computers, you know, the variety of things that the government wanted to do, couldn't afford to do, but yet the people will do them because they want those gardens. So they'll find time to make it happen, to earn that currency so they can pay their rent. And you could manage the rent, with the amount of work that needs to be done. In fact, they have an excess of volunteers. They need to find other work for these volunteers to do because there's so many people that actually want to earn this money, this currency.
So these volunteers can work in the garden and do all these other things, get credits,
yep,
and then these credits go to pay the rent of the garden.
Yep.
Plus, can purchase other things.
Exactly.
Perhaps?
Purchase other things. Like, you know,
this is all adding up to a very interesting picture of. There are alternative currencies or forms of currencies or exchange systems that people can use, communities can use, to accomplish things that don't have to go through banks and the national currencies.
Right. So you tend to see that these kind of programs are more... one of the problems with these currencies, I'll say it maybe this way, is that it is less efficient. Obviously, it's most efficient to just use one currency for everything. But then you have this, it's less resilient. So you have the likelihood of these monetary crashes that tend to happen, or that there are a lot of services that need to be done, or programs that need to be done that there's no money for because it's all coming from the same thing. So you have to fill in these gaps with these other currencies, which makes it less efficient but more resilient. And people tend to be more open to that, to that lesser degree of efficiency if... they're incentivized in times of economic hardship. That's where you see it most. Economic hardship, money dries up in more significant ways, and so people still need to make exchanges. They still need to eat food. They still need other services. So that's where these currencies tend to pick up a lot more often, and you tend to see them in various forms. And so you look at Argentina in 2001, the government, their money was worth nothing, actually. Nobody even wanted the money. They had to come up with a different kind of money. And governments can play a very central role in these complementary currencies. Right now, governments tend to borrow from private banks to pay their bills. But they can actually create their own, and then it's much cheaper for governments. They can actually save a lot of money and still get a lot of things done in their community to help out the people that live there without having to spend a lot of money. The example that I gave you before, which was the gardening example, that was the municipal government was involved. It was their currency, but I think it ended up costing them. The statistic is 1/5 to 1/10 the cost of what it would have cost had they actually paid people to do that same work.
So running these municipal exchanges with some kind of local currency may be less efficient, but it costs a lot less.
Costs a lot less, exactly.
Well, Ryan, I want to thank you very much for explaining. Well, they're not community currencies, the complementary currencies,
sure,
as you call them.
Yeah.
And it is fascinating that currency exchange systems can be set up without money, but just with effort. It sounds like anyone can be a banker.
Pretty much, you could be a bank, yeah.
It could be a whole
create
new
your
world.
Own money, sure.
It could be a whole new world.
Money, you have to understand, money... I mean, just to summarize it, is an agreement. That's all it really is. Money itself isn't worth anything. I mean, most of it's electronic bits in a computer, right? That's about over 95% of it. So some of it's paper, but what's a paper worth? Like, you can't eat the paper. You can't even eat, what is it? It's not really a resource. We've used all kinds of things for money, but it's just a token. So in the end of the day, this token is only accepted as having something of value if you and I agree that it has value. If I tell you that something else is of value and you don't believe me, then we're not going to have an exchange. So we have to, usually the government tells you what's of value because they accept it as taxes. That's what gives money value for them to accept it. But if a community agrees something else, then is of value, then all of a sudden that is. And you try to prevent any kind of, taking that currency and manipulating it in some way. But when currencies are working with one another, then you tend to figure out who's doing that if it's a small scale. So I think that it's a lot of potential for communities to use this kind of program, and it could end up that organizations that have spare capacity can think about this if you run a business, or if you have connections to people with businesses and they have spare capacities, you're a restaurant, you're not full all the time, you know, perhaps there's some room in there for a currency to take some of that spare capacity. And you could look into, I would highly recommend the book Rethinking Money, How New Currencies Turn Scarcity into Prosperity, which is by Bernard Lyotard and Jackie Dunn. There's a lot of other research out there. If you type in complementary currencies into Wikipedia or something like that, you'll probably see a lot of the researchers out there that are working on this problem and the potential for some of these solutions and the success stories as well. So there's a lot of stories out there and a lot of versions, and a lot of the hard work has been done. So we can learn from these mistakes that people have made trying to start these things, and we can start and still try out new things in our own communities, new opportunities, and you know, you never know where it goes. And it's a fun project. It's not necessarily, you don't think of it as work. Think of it as an opportunity for fun and to connect to people that otherwise wouldn't have been able to connect.
We're talking today with Ryan Diamond, who's helping us rethink money. And I have one final question, Ryan.
Sure.
We're talking today in a place that is called the Toronto Tool Library. What is a tool library?
Well, this is a different subject.
As an alternative way of doing things.
It is, yeah. So, again, it's actually similar to the idea of time banks or complementary currencies in that what you're trying to do is use spare capacity. So people who own tools often don't use them every day. You know, unless you're a contractor, you do it for a living, you tend to need it for a specialized project, or maybe when you renovate your home, you need the tools often. But after that, they just sit there in your basement, in your garage, and they gather dust. Meanwhile, other people might need it when it's just sitting there. So this tool library is the idea that we can use the spare capacity, essentially the tools that are spare and just sitting around, put them in one centralized place, and then people can come by and borrow the tools.
Call it a tool library.
They need it. And when you use the term library, the tool library, so when you call it a library, people understand, oh, well, I don't really read a book more than once often. You know, I read it and I'm done with it. It just sits on the bookshelf. So I can do that, but by keeping that book there, obviously you're preventing someone else from reading it. So here, with the same thing with a tool, when you use that term library, people understand, and then they can say, okay, hey, maybe we can, and people just donate the tools. I mean, they're all donated from the community. We have over 700 tools here.
I look around, I see a lot of tools. So someone can come into the tool library, become a member, and borrow a tool when they need it.
That's right. So we make it very affordable, $50 a year. If that's too expensive, we have pay-what-you-can options. And then people borrow the tools, and they return them three to 7 days later, and, you know, they're hopefully done with their project over the weekend, and someone else can use that same tool.
Another fascinating way of rethinking money.
Yes, exactly.
Ryan Diamond, thank you for this discussion and educating us about how to rethink money and all the alternatives that, well, they're out there and people are using them.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks, Max, for having me.
You're an innovator.
Thank you.
And I hope we get to talk about this again.
Community Exchange is brought to you by Clumfest Radio. Community Exchange is an ongoing discussion of issues affecting communities around the world. Clumfest Radio is produced by Clumfest Global Community Film Festival. This year's Clumfest will happen September 12 to 15 in Toronto's famous St. Lawrence Market area. For information about Clumfest, visit clumfest.com. That's spelled C-O-M-M-F-F-E-S-T, clumfest.com. We will close this program with our theme music, composed by jazz musician Wilson McLeish. If you want more information on this music, go to whamjamjazz.com.